Hello everyone and welcome to Texas Cannabis Report, your eyes and ears for cannabis news from across the Lone Star State. I'm your host, Stephen Carter. Today is Sunday, July 6th, and this is episode 5 of our podcast. You can find us on the web at texcan.com, that's TXCANN.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Pinterest, Instagram, and you can email us at texcan@gmail.com. Diving right into some good news today, the City Council in Austin voted to pass a resolution in support of medical marijuana. The resolution amends the city's state legislative agenda to support laws which would legalize cannabis for medicinal use in Texas and give legal protections to those using it as prescribed by a licensed physician. It was sponsored by City Council members Bill Spellman and Mike Martinez. Now, this doesn't mean that you can consume marijuana in a medicinal capacity in Austin. It doesn't change the law or anything like that. It simply has Austin officially supporting the Texas legislator changing the laws concerning medical cannabis. So while it doesn't actually change anything, it does help add weight behind the movement to change things. So this is a step in the right direction, and we had a lot of people out there supporting this resolution. I believe Vincent Lopez of the Pact Alliance was out there, and Mamas was out there as well. So we need more cities, doing this. So next year, whenever the legislature convenes, it'll just help keep pushing things forward. Moving right along to the next bit of legislation. Recently, a committee in Washington, D.C. in Congress voted to try to block a marijuana penalty reduction law set to take place in Washington, D.C. The City Council in D.C. voted to decrease the penalty for possession to a mere $25 and, make it so that you don't have to go to jail if you get caught with a small amount of marijuana. The committee decided they were going to try to block this law by defunding any measures that would be put forth in enforcing this law. Now, what they might not have realized whenever they did this is that by making sure that Washington, D.C. can't spend any money on enforcement of this law, they might have just de facto legalized marijuana there, because now law enforcement can't put any sort of resources towards arresting people or jailing them or prosecuting them or anything. So if you can't spend money prosecuting people for cannabis, then it's basically legal to possess. So I'm sure that's not what they intended, and we'll see how the courts figure this out, because I'm sure this will go through some sort of court to decide how this is going to play out. But right now, that's how it's looking. In Texas, we have 4 representatives on the House Appropriations Committee, which is the committee that voted on this measure. They voted in favor of blocking funding for the new law, and that includes 3 Republicans, which are John Carter of District 31, John Culberson of District 7, Kay Granger of District 12, and then Texas's sole Democrat on the committee, which is Henry Cuyler of District 28. So things are constantly moving forward legislatively, and while Congress is always going to be behind on everything, it's inevitable, and they're just doing whatever they can to stop it. It's going to happen, though. Coming up next, we have an interview with Russ Belville, who is the host of 420 Radio. He was out at the DFW Normal, Texas Regional Normal Conference, and we spoke with him about his arrest in Utah. And so we'll go ahead and be playing that for you here in just a second. But before we get to that, I want to give a big thank you to Haas Productions, run by Stephen Haas, who did a lot of work to get the new Texas Cannabis Report logo up and running. So it looks great, and it's just great. And if you need logo work done, he specializes in signs and stuff like that. So if you need quality sign work done, logo work done for a very competitive price, I would definitely recommend checking him out. All right, here's our interview with Russ Belville. I'm here with Russ Belville at the 2014 DFW Normal Texas Regional Normal Conference. We're in the afternoon session right now. Russ had a presentation this morning, and I got to say, he knocked it out of the park. Can you tell me this about this little constitutional scholarship essay that you gave us this morning?
Yeah, you know, I had originally planned to come in here and dazzle everyone with a bunch of stats and charts about Washington and Colorado legalization, and then I got to thinking, you know, that's almost like showing off, like, haha, we've got legalization. And also, you can look that stuff up if you really want to. And I thought that, you know, I even just thought this just a couple nights ago, was maybe I should do something that's more motivating, like why we're in it and what it's really all about. And so back at Seattle Hemp Fest 2 or 3 years ago, I did a speech that I called the amendment speech, which was you get 5 minutes on stage. And I was able to knock out the first 10 amendments in 5 minutes, so 30 seconds amendment. So it was just very frenetic, and I'm just crossing stuff off of a poster board that my friends are holding up on stage. And I'd always wanted to do that as a longer form presentation where I could get into a little more detail. So literally just last night, I thought, why don't I just do the amendments, right? So all of this stuff I've researched and I know about it, and I just never all put it into one presentation. So that's what I did last night, is I put this all together. And the idea of it is that, you know, there's no other issue.
Hold on. You came up with this on the fly?
Yeah. Well, I hate saying it that way, because it makes people say, oh my God. But it's stuff that I've already written down and written about in countless articles and speeches. Mm-hmm. This was just me condensing it into one thing. So yeah, last night I put it together all together, but it's all stuff that's already been written and put together. Yeah.
Well, I got to say, it was an awesome presentation. So for throwing it together like that, that was great.
Well, thank you. I used to, you know, my corporate alter ego before I became an activist, I was a Microsoft Office master, it was a master expert or something, the highest level of instructor you could be in Microsoft software. So, you know, throwing together a PowerPoint, it's like, you know, walking and chewing gum, it's easy for me, you know. But thank you, I appreciate that.
All right. Want to move on to your arrest in Utah. Can you tell us about what you faced and what you're looking at now?
Okay, so the charge is possession of marijuana, possession of paraphernalia, neither of which I had on my person or in my bags because, well, I'm me. I think I'm kind of a target, so I, you know, don't deal with that. But my assistant at the time, he had brought along what I then found out to be many more things than I had any awareness of, right? So the charge I face in Utah, each charge, the paraphernalia and the marijuana charge, is a misdemeanor charge that can get you 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. Now, will I actually end up getting that? Depends. You know, I have a pretty clean record. I've had a couple disturbing the peace tickets when I was a young alcohol drinking partying man. But yeah, pretty clean record, and no violence or anything like that. So my thought is that I should probably end up with probation or something. But on the other hand, I am a high-profile marijuana legalization activist. And if you've got a conservative judge who wants to make a statement, who knows what I end up getting? At this point, I haven't even been charged and have no court date yet. And it's been since April 17th. It's like, what, June now? Mm-hmm. So it's been 6 weeks, and we haven't even heard anything yet. So still kind of in the holding pattern for it. As far as what happened, we were driving myself, my assistant, and my roommate, who's a 69-year-old veteran. We're driving his Cadillac from Portland, Oregon to Denver, Colorado, on our way through, coming through Idaho and Utah. The reason we came through Idaho, of course, it's geographic, right? But I was born in Idaho, so I've got family there, and we visited. Rather than going through Wyoming, we went through Utah because we're going to visit some of my roommate's family in western Colorado. So that was the most logical route. As we are driving south on from Idaho, approaching the border, we see these signs, three in succession, that say, you know, drug checkpoint ahead, drug dogs at work, and sheriffs ahead, or something like that. Now, this is a trick. There are no drug checkpoints. It's unconstitutional. There, you can have drunk driving checkpoints. You can't have drug checkpoints. The trick is they watch to see, after those signs, who pulls over or who gets off on the next turnoff, right? So I know that trick, and I was like, I was driving. I was like, all right, we ain't stopping. We're going to keep going. But my roommate was saying, oh, I really got to pee, really got to pee. He's like, So we get out of, I decided that we would get out of Idaho and then get into Utah. So we get, and the first place in Utah is this, I can't remember the name of the place anymore. The trauma has erased it from my mind. But Snowville, that's what it is, Snowville. So, which is 7 miles over the border there. And give me a second. So it's 7 miles over the border there. And there's like a Flying J truck stop and like a little town of maybe 50 or 80 people, who knows. So we pulled off there to the truck stop, and Larry went in to use the bathroom, and I went into the convenience store to get something to eat. Now, at this point of the tale, it's important to understand that my assistant is a dreadlocked Rastafarian, a white kid, but with long red hair dreadlocks, and dresses the part, has the kind of hippie jacket and all that kind of stuff. So Larry's filling gas. I'm in the convenience store. He decides to get out of the car and go to the convenience store, either unaware or probably unaware of the fact that there are two cop cars parked there, where the cops are just sitting watching people. Mm-hmm. And
they're looking for anything out of the ordinary.
Yeah, and another unmarked. And yeah. Here we are with a Cadillac with Oregon plates, mm-hmm. and this dreadlocked kid coming out of it, right? So we get back in the car to go, and we're not 4 miles down the road, mile marker 11 or so, when the SUV canine officer has pulled us over. Now, we get pulled over, and he comes to my side and clips something on the window after he has me roll the window down, clips something on the window, and it beeps. I'm like, what the hell is that? I'm thinking, is this a detector of particles on the inside of smoke or something? No, it's a window tint detector. So he clips it on first, it beeps, and then he takes it off, and he says, do you know why I pulled you over? I said, why did you pull us over? And I wasn't driving at this point. Larry and I switched at the truck stop because I'd been driving from Idaho all day. And he says, so why did you pull us over? And he says, well, your window tint's too dark. It's only letting through 23% of the light. In the state of Utah, it must let through 42% of the light. And even in your home state of Oregon, it must let out 35% of the light. So you're illegal there, too. And so I'm thinking, yeah, we were coming by you at freeway speed, and you were in the median, and you could tell that the window tint was too dark. Yeah.
Sounds like a load of BS to
me. That's it. It could have been maybe your buddies phoned ahead to say, hey, there's Oregon plates coming through with dark window tint and a dreadlock kid. Mm. So I believe total profiling. Mm. So he does the series of questions that, unfortunately, my roommate didn't know to not answer. The typical things like, well, hey, where are you headed? And he says, well, we're headed to visit my son in Colorado. I forget the town's name. Edwards, Colorado. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, great. Thanks for letting the officer know that we're on our way to the state where pot is legal on 420 weekend. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And, you know, some other questions. And so the cop goes back to his car and then comes back and tells Larry, my roommate, all right, well, you know, we're just going to let you go with a warning for the window tint, but you want to step out of the car and have a conversation with me back here? Now, as we learned in this last presentation...
That was a request.
Right. As we learned in this last presentation, the point at which he said, we're going to let you off with the window tint warning, the probable cause, or the reasonable suspicion, or whatever it is, whatever level it is, was the window tint.
Yeah.
So once he said, we're going to let you off with a warning, that encounter is done. there is no more, we're no more talking about the probable cause thing. Everything from that point on is questions.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to get out of the car and have a talk with me? At which point you are supposed to say, am I under arrest or am I free to go?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll probably say free to go because they got nothing.
They don't have anything.
Well, unfortunately, my roommate, like I said, he's 69. He's, you know, and he just said, well, okay, and he got out of the car. Now, the conversation that he had back in the car was tragic in that the officer asked him, so you don't have any drugs in that car, do you? And he responded, no, I cleaned that car out this weekend. I cleaned that car out this weekend. And then he follows up with, so if I run my dog around the car, is it going to alert? And he says, well, probably I'm a medical marijuana patient. And that, of course, is all the probable cause he needs right there to do the search. So he orders me and my assistant out. We go down, you know, down the road and sit down by those, in the tumbleweeds over there, down the freeway, while the cops come and go all through the interior of the car, pull the panels on the inside of the Cadillac, breaks one of them, opens the trunk, pulls out all our bags, starts going through all our bags, all that stuff. And, of course, they start finding things of my assistants. And I'm kind of watching from the distance, and I see them find one thing. I'm like, okay, great. But they kept finding more things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the hell is going on here?
It's just piling up.
Yeah, and I'm like, how much did you bring? Jesus. So, so they say, well, you know, we found you're under arrest. You know, stand up, put your hands behind your back. So they arrested both me and my assistant. I got charged with one count. I have no idea why. Maybe they pulled something from his bag and attributed it to mine. Maybe they found something loose in the car and attributed it to me. I don't know, but my bags are marked.
But they didn't arrest your roommate.
No, they let him go. They let the roommate go with the car, and my belief there is that without him, they knew the two of us couldn't bail out.
Ah, I see.
That's my thought on it. Oh. Or they're just being nice to the old man.
Maybe.
One or the other.
Yeah.
So it is Utah. Mormons are very polite. Mm. So anyway.
Polite enough to throw you in a cage.
That's right. So I got cuffed and stuffed into the and I'll tell you, one of the sad things is, we were busted in Box Elder County, which is the biggest county in Utah, at the very north end of the county, and the county seat's at the very south end, Brigham City. So I spent the longest possible ride in a cop car you can in Utah.
Yeah.
It's like 40 minutes, and just tears your shoulders. It's awful when you're handcuffed. Got put into jail and booked, and it was funny in the booking because me and the cops had the same haircut, so... we seem to get along for some reason, and they ask you these series of questions when you're being booked, right? And one of the questions, and I suppose it has to do with gangs and stuff, right, was, do you have any known enemies in the state of Utah? And I said, present company excepted? Or present company excluded?
Yeah, excluded.
Present company excluded?
Yeah.
And they laughed, and the one in the back said, oh, that's a good one. And then another question is sexual orientation, to which I said, anywhere but here.
Yeah.
Anywhere but here is fine. And then the third question was religious affiliation, and I said atheist. And he hits the drop-down box in the program and scrolls and scrolls and scrolls. He says, and we don't have that.
We don't have that.
And I thought, I'm like, oh, yeah, it is Utah.
Yeah.
Like, well, I was baptized Mormon. Put down Mormon. It'll make my aunt happy. So go ahead, you know, or whatever. I'm in jail. What difference does it make? Plus, I learned in the Army that if you put down a religious preference, you get out of stuff on Sunday. They let you go to services and stuff. You have to clean toilets and whatever. Anyway, so in the jail and had to answer the questions, get booked and everything. And then they, you know, I'm informed, you know, what's the bail? I bail myself out. He says it's $11.66. And I realize he's not saying $11.66.
No,
it's $1,166. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, there's a bank of phones over there. You can call, call collect, and you can call, there's a list of bail bondsmen, but you know, you being two states away, they're probably not going to bond you. I'm like, yeah. So I go to the pay phones to call some friends of mine.
How much did that cost, by the way?
The
pay phone.
Oh, it was collect call. You do it by collect call. But it is expensive.
Yeah.
So I get to the phone to start calling some of my friends, and then I realize I haven't memorized a cell phone since the 20th, or a phone number since the 20th century, right? It's all cell phones, right?
Yeah.
I don't know anybody's number, right? So I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know who to call. And I said, do you got my cell phone in evidence? You know, maybe you could pull that out. And no, we don't have it. And I realized, oh, I left it in the car.
Yeah.
Well, that's so good. Still, so the cops don't have my cell phone. That's good. And so then I said, well, 1166. I'm thinking, God, I think I've got like $1,200 in my account. Can I just bail myself out with my credit card already? And they have my wallet. So he's like, well, yeah, yeah. Do you give me permission to take out the... And like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he runs it. Turns out there's a 6% surcharge for running it, and it just put me over how much I had. So I couldn't bail myself out. Anyway, then I find out that my assistant was got one possession of marijuana and five paraphernalia charges. Wow.
So that right. jumped his bond up a little bit.
$3,707.
Yeah.
Right? So the two of us... You know, $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I did manage to. I knew Larry was still out there, my roommate, waiting to bail us out. And so I gave him a note of how to open my cell phone and to call my friend and tell him we need bail money. That got me bailed out, and then I was able to call other people and get him bailed out. Mm-hmm. This whole encounter from pullover to getting bailed out, 10:30 in the morning to 6 at night. So it took 8.5 hours. Out of my life.
And had it been handled properly, it would have never occurred.
Right, yeah. Now, the same weekend this was happening to me, a friend of mine was in Missouri. My friend has a cultivation conviction. He's a convicted felon for cultivating in Missouri, but since has become an activist. So he went back, got a rental car, and was driving. He had won some lawsuit, so he's driving around, right? He got profiled, pulled over, all that kind of stuff. And I got to watch the dash cam video of this. And the officer said, well, would you mind you step out? We'd like to run a drug dog around your car. He goes, I don't consent to any searches. Well, could you step out of the car and talk to us? Are you ordering me to step out of the car? Well, no. Am I being detained or am I free to go? Well, you're free to go. And he drove off.
That's that.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a story, and it's just sad that it had to happen. Let's move on to a brighter topic. 420 Radio, it's booming, it seems. Can you tell us where you're at with that?
Well, the 6th, so was that? No, I'm sorry, the 4th, 3 days ago, mm-hmm. was the second anniversary of doing this show live and independent on 420 Radio. So, yeah, we've been at it for 2 years. We have 40 hours of podcast programming that we replay from all around the world. Mostly the United States, but some Canada, some Britain, some Spain. So 40 hours a week that we replay, and then another 40 hours a week of live programming, original programming. 2 hours a day I do the Russ Belville Show, which the first hour is news and information and interviews and rants. And the second hour is live call-in and music and a little more freewheeling. We have five different live music shows that we do, not live performances, but live, like, VJs, yeah. I guess, running music. It's just, it's been phenomenal, especially I find that we've got a large, our audience is largely activists, is largely people who are in this for the reform movement. And so that's what pleases me the most, is when I go to these conferences and someone says, yeah, that thing you said the other day on the show, I used that at the legislature, or I said that to someone at the table or whatever, and it really worked. And well, that's exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted this to be public radio for marijuana. Sometimes we get called the NPR of POT, right? So we wanted a place where, because I knew all these great activists all around the country, and it's pretty easy to do a podcast, but getting it out there for everyone to hear... Because, like, you know, if you went up and looked up marijuana podcasts, you could find 80 of them, and, all right, which one am I going to listen to?
Mm-hmm.
But with this radio, it's just like radio. You find a new show. You find something new that's playing that you can really sink your teeth into. And we direct traffic to their sites.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want, you know, people. This is not really a for-profit. In fact, we're registered as a nonprofit. So this isn't about trying to make 420 Radio big and rich. I mean, we'd like to have a lot of exposure, and that is mainly to get this message out from so many different voices, you know, conservative, liberal, eastern, western, midwestern, southern, international. We want to hear it all.
That's great that you put together this radio station to get all of this out there. I understand that you can get it on TuneIn Radio, yeah. And you can stream it directly through the website. What are the other ways you can consume it?
You can get the Ustream, which provides our video window and webcam. So if you go to Ustream.tv, it's under Radical Russ on Ustream.tv. And on, Stitcher? Stitcher is a podcast aggregator, so you can kind of make your own radio station, your own recordings, and you can get the podcast automatically that way. iTunes, of course. or any other kind of podcast aggregator. You can subscribe that way. What's the other one? I'm forgetting something. Oh, Shoutcast. A lot of people use Winamp or some of those third-party or independent kind of applications. Anything that can grab an internet audio stream, we've got something for you. So if you got a player that can play internet music, we can get you 420 Radio that way. And coming soon, hopefully by Seattle Hemp Fest, which is in August, we'll have the 420 Radio app. You just download that on your smartphone and just push play, be able to look at the archives, be able to read the stories, all that.
So you can pretty much just listen to it in the vehicle or wherever you're going. And, you know, you can keep up with all the latest news and podcasts.
Yeah, we get that. I get another contingent. Okay, so I've got the activists who listen. Another contingent I get are people who are in the industry, workers, you know, just the working class people, right? Glass blowers, trimmers, growers who will put the podcast on while they're trimming, you know, boring job, but, and then you can get information and news while you're doing that. So yeah, commuters, you know.
Yep. So that's a perfect time to do it. All right. Well, thank you for telling us your story, Russ.
Thanks, man.
We look forward to having you on the show again the next time you're in Texas.
Yeah.
You got to visit more often.
You know, at least twice a year would be good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
All right.
And there you have it. Russ always does a fantastic job at these conferences. His presentations are great, and the stories he tells are just magnificent. And he's one of the leaders in this reform movement. And I can only see greater and greater things from him. And I spoke with Russ Belville, and we will be launching Texas Cannabis Report on the 420 Radio Network in the very near future. So keep checking for us to be on there, and we'll have an announcement on the website whenever that officially happens. Moving right along to our monthly events segment. This is a 4th of July weekend. DFW Normal just is wrapping up today their retreat at Crazy Rick's. And they had a 3-day camp out, bonfire, food, members only events. So I'm sure it was a good time. I saw a lot of great pictures from out there. Coming up on the 9th is the Central Texas Normal Alliance supports the Justice for Jacob meeting in Killeen. On the 9th as well, they're going to have a normal night at the House Sports Bar and Grill in Arlington, put on by DFW Normal. On the 12th, Normal Waco is going to have their highway cleanup, and then following that, they're going to have a meet and greet at the Dancing Bear Pub with Legally Normal. Also on that day, going down in Houston is North Houston Normal's monthly meeting. On the 16th, Texas Normal is having their strategy meeting in Austin. And then on the 19th, a couple days later, Texas Normal is having their veterans conference in Austin. On that same day, Odessa Normal is having an interest group meetup in Odessa to gauge the interest of people out there who might want to start a normal chapter. And I plan to be in Odessa that weekend, so if at all possible, I will try to make it out to that meeting to see how things go. So I'm looking forward to that. On the 24th, we have an event from Northeast Texas Normal. They're having their second official monthly meeting in Longview. And they're a new group, and we're going to get to them very shortly. DFW Normal is having their July 2014 meeting at Bryan Street Tavern in Dallas on the 26th. The Central Texas Normal Alliance's pool party fundraiser for Jacob is in Killeen on the 27th. And then Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition is having a presentation by Richard Lee of Oaksterdam University in Houston on the 30th. So if you can make it out to any of these events, I definitely recommend checking any of them out. And if you have any cannabis-related events going on around Texas for this month or any upcoming months, please email those to us and we'll get them listed on our page. You can find that on our events page on our website. Now, speaking of this Northeast Texas Normal group, they were previously known as the East Texas Cannabis Coalition, but since they got their paperwork pushed through and it's all official now, you know, they're the new Northeast group of Normal here in Texas, and they had their first official meeting in Longview last month, and that's pretty much where they're based out of. So if you're over there in East Texas near Longview, I recommend checking these people out. They met at Hensley Park to celebrate their first official meeting on June 12th. And 3 months prior to that, their board was formed. They had a bunch of different people speak out there and had some news coverage. I believe they were on the local news broadcast that night. Got Nikki Williams. She's heading up the group as its executive director. She said, "What we want to do is educate people. And once people learn and understand the truths of the medicinal properties of marijuana, I don't think anyone can be against it." Hope May, who is the financial officer of the group, said the group does not condone illegal activities and is pushing for legal reform. "We are trying to get people to vote to get this passed in legislation," she said. "Marijuana is not something that is just for lazy bums. It is helping children and the elderly. For children that are having seizures, the alternative is you can't do anything. It is very important that we ask ourselves, how does what we feel affect other people? Why should you have the option to affect the care of other people?" Another group of a member of the group, Nicole Rains, also shared her own story of battling breast cancer, which she was diagnosed with nearly 3 years ago at the age of 26. She said that she's undergone 45 rounds of radiation treatment and suffers from nerve damage in her chest. "The pain has been so severe, she used to take 1,500 milligrams of hydrocodone per day just to get out of bed in the morning. She claims to have found a better alternative to the addictive opiates, that being marijuana." She said, "I took my prescribed medicine before today, and I'm still hurting," she said. "My body hurts all day, and pot would fix that. The benefits when I was able to do it were so great compared to the opiates that the doctors prescribed. But they would rather you use that than something that is natural." While the group's focus is to legalize cannabis in all facets, their primary focus for that particular meeting, though, was medical marijuana. And, of course, they've got their next meeting coming up on July 24th, where they're going to expand on what they talk about and what's going on there. And so if you're anywhere out there near Longview, I definitely recommend checking it out. Moving on to our crime segment, a Texas rancher recently discovered a marijuana farm worth what they say was $2 million on federal land that he's leasing from the Army Corps of Engineers. The Chambers County Sheriff's Department received a call from the rancher the other day after he saw people running from a clearing. Whenever he got into there, he realized that they had a pretty elaborate growing operation going on in all different stages, all the way from seedlings to fully flowering plants. And I don't know if any dried bud was found, but they did say that they recovered 5,500 plants total. So while they couldn't say how long the operation had been going on for, they said it had been there for apparently quite a while. And the area was so secluded that you couldn't get vehicles in there, so they had to bring in helicopters and an air wing unit to help secure the area and see what all was going on. And they didn't arrest anyone, and they don't know who was involved, but chances are pretty good that it was drug cartel related, because this is pretty much their MO. So they're still investigating, and as we get more information, we'll let you know. Next up, we have another story where someone admitted to consuming marijuana before something bad happened, and now, of course, everyone's trying to pile on and say, "Oh, well, they did it because they were high on marijuana." Well, that's not the case. A San Marcos woman faces an intoxication manslaughter charge after telling an investigator she was smoking marijuana and taking painkillers the night before a collision that resulted in a Spicewood man's death. Rachel Beth Riley, 24, was charged with intoxication manslaughter June 23rd, a day after the accident involving a 2000 Oldsmobile she was driving and a 2006 Harley-Davidson motorcycle driven by 74-year-old Ivan Johnson Jr. She was also arrested for possession of marijuana at the time of the accident. So she was basically driving around the day after that she admitted smoking and taking these painkillers. I have no idea what was in her system at the time, but she was arrested with marijuana on her whenever she had the accident. Chances are this is just someone who is doing something stupid she didn't think, and she's now taken a life because of her poor decisions, and that really has no bearing on her use or anyone else's use of cannabis. So we just need to keep that in mind. Now, for those of you who keep up with NCAA sports, you might know that Robbie Rhodes, which is Baylor's blue-chip wide receiver, was arrested on possession of marijuana and tampering with physical evidence charges on May 2nd after a traffic stop in Waco for failure to signal a lane change. Officers said they smelled marijuana and after a search found 5.8 grams of marijuana in a baggie under his front seat. The tampering charge was added because he allegedly tried to hide the drugs. Now, Baylor University and his attorney, Jonathan Sibley, said that they've been drug testing Rhodes for 7 months and he's never tested positive for drug use. And even after he was arrested, he never tested positive. So they took these test results to the DA's office and showed them that he's never tested positive for marijuana, and he claims to have not known about the marijuana. So the DA's office has decided to drop the charges against him for possession. This is pretty unheard of. I don't understand why they're dropping the charges, but I'm not going to argue with them on this. It just seems odd that they've dropped the charges for this Baylor wide receiver. According to the jail records, Rhodes was previously cited for possession of drug paraphernalia. But other than that, he has no arrest history in McLennan County. And another wide receiver, actually the top wide receiver in the NFL last year, Josh Gordon, is in trouble again, this time not for marijuana possession, but for driving intoxicated. So that guy just can't seem to stay out of trouble. And we hope he gets his act together. And, of course, we hope the NFL changes their substance abuse policy to either lighten up on cannabis use or eliminate a ban on cannabis use altogether, considering that we have two states legal now and over 30 states with some form of medical marijuana, so it really makes no sense for them to inhibit players from using this natural plant, which helps them to battle injuries and recover from what is really a brutal sport. All right, coming up is our music segment. We have Grades of Absolute Truth this episode, and they're performing a song called Lead. They're based out of Fort Worth, and their next show will be on Friday, July 11th at the Grotto in Fort Worth. You can check out their Bandcamp page on our show notes. Now, here is Lead by Grades of Absolute Truth.
Let me shoot it to you straight, and I've said all of this before. Before, I would hate to pull the trigger, but if harm is knocking at my door, an intruder breaks in, you dial 911. What you feel safer with, the telephone or a gun? Got kids and a house and a lady to protect, and it only takes a sec for a lunatic to flip. Uncomfortable with trusting my family's fate to how fast the police can respond to the case. Better pick up the pace, ain't just gonna sit here and wait, and just in case they get here too late. I sleep with a 9 underneath my pillow, got a 12 gauge under my bed, so don't come in this house unannounced, or there might be lead flying at your head. I sleep with a 9 underneath my pillow, got a 12 gauge under my bed, so don't come in this house unannounced, or there might be lead flying at your head. In Texas, it's expected you have a weapon, but if guns murder people, all of mine are defective. Around these parts, as far as I can tell, the castle doctrine will stay alive and well. Love to hit the range, bust off a few rounds. Of course it's a sport, but just in case it goes down, I need a place with three safes, a shed full of ammo, closets filled with camo on the edge of Menlo. And it's been expunged, so my record is clean. Don't point your little judgmental fingers at me. And if the zombie apocalypse comes, I'm posting up with my pops and triple tapping for fun.
I sleep with a 9 underneath my pillow, got a 12 gauge under my bed, so don't come in this house unannounced, or there might be lead flying at your head. I sleep with a 9 underneath my pillow, got a 12 gauge under my bed, so don't come in this house unannounced, or there might be lead flying at
serve. Breaking my house, you get put in the dirt. God forbid they get deep in a hearse. Should've thought about that before crossing the turf. Deadly force is a last resort. What choice do I have if it's mine or yours? No price on how much your life is worth. Think twice before you deny my word. As long as it is, not a concern. Breaking my house, you get put in the dirt. God forbid they get deep in a hearse. Should've thought about that before crossing the turf. Deadly force is a last resort. What choice do I have if it's mine or yours? No price on how much your life is worth. Think twice before you deny my words. I would hate to pull the trigger, but if harm is knocking at my door, I sleep with a 9 underneath my pillow. Got a 12 gauge under my bed. So don't come in this house unannounced, or there might be lead flying at your head. I sleep with a 9 underneath my pillow. Got a 12 gauge under my bed. So don't come in this house unannounced, or there might be lead flying at your head. In Texas, it's expected you have a weapon. Be shooting to you straight, and I've said all of this before. In Texas, it's expected you have a weapon. I would hate to pull the trigger, but if harm is knocking at my door. In Texas, it's expected you have a weapon. Be shooting to you straight, and I've said all of this before. In Texas, it's expected you have a weapon. I would hate to pull the trigger, but if harm is knocking at my door.
And that was led by Grades of Absolute Truth. It's not often that you hear that message in that format, so I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Coming up next, we have our interest piece segment. We're going to start doing interest pieces on various people throughout the movement here in Texas. Our very first one was on Callie D. She works a lot with DFW Normal, and she's very much into the local music scene up there in Fort Worth and the Dallas area, and she hosts her own internet radio show as well, which I believe is supposed to be going on the FM very soon. And she was very, very open about her her support for marijuana legalization. She's a single mother, she's a church-going Christian, and here in Texas, we not only need more people like that speaking out, but the general perception of people in this movement is that we're not like the other people here in Texas. So this kind of puts that on its head and shows people you're more similar to us than you think. So I recommend checking out that piece. You can find it in our show notes. You can also go to our website and find it there. Also want to touch briefly on Cliff Duvall getting a guest column in the local paper here in Waco. Cliff Duvall is the founder and executive director of what Normal of Waco, Inc. And he wrote a great article, which was originally a letter to the editor, called Let's Legalize Pot Responsibly in Texas. It was an awesome piece, and it was too long to run as a letter to the editor, so the Waco Tribune Herald ran it in their guest column series, and I was shocked to see it, because Waco Tribune Herald has not been friendly towards cannabis candidates and cannabis topics, so it's good to see that. And we ran his letter to the editor on our website as well, so if you want to check that out, you can find that in our show notes as well. Another good bit of news is that the FDA is going to reevaluate the scheduling of marijuana as a less dangerous drug. As you know, marijuana is considered Schedule I drug, meaning that it has no accepted medical use at all. It's one of the most dangerous drugs out there, and that it's just out-and-out harmful. No good can come of it. And obviously, this is an absurd scheduling for this plant. FDA press officer Jeff Ventura described the review process, which is being completed at the request of the Drug Enforcement Agency. He said the FDA conducts for Health and Human Services a scientific and medical analysis of the drug under consideration, which is currently ongoing. Health and Human Services then recommends to DEA that the drug be placed in a given schedule. DEA considers Health and Human Services analysis, conducts its own assessment, and makes a final scheduling proposal in the form of a proposed rule. So while the FDA doesn't control the rescheduling of this, they do the review and then give a recommendation to the DEA, who then can reschedule it as they see fit or not reschedule it. And contrary to what people believe, both President Obama and Congress have the power to have the DEA reschedule marijuana. So while they're going back and forth saying that it's the other group's job, group or person's job to do this, either group can do this. They're just afraid to touch it, and it's just a shame that Obama can so easily have cannabis rescheduled, but he's choosing not to, and I frankly don't understand why. All right, the past week there was an article that's been making the rounds on social media about a Texas judge sentencing a man to death for marijuana possession. And to put it bluntly, it just isn't true. A satire website called Empire News put out an article about an Austin Superior Court judge sentencing 34-year-old Joseph Goldsmith to death row after Goldsmith was picked up on his third offense for marijuana possession. While you can't get put to death for possession in Texas, you can get what amounts to a life sentence. It takes possessing over 2,000 pounds in order to get the possibility of serving a 99-year sentence with a minimum of 5 years. Selling, on the other hand, just requires over 50 pounds in order to receive the 99-year sentence. Now, if you're Jacob Lavoro or anyone else caught with concentrates, which is essentially pure THC, it's very easy to face a life sentence. As few as 4 grams of concentrate can net you anywhere from 5 to 99 years. With the way the law reads, anything the concentrates are found in can be added to the total weight. In Lavoro's case, they weighed the eggs, chocolate, flour, and all other ingredients in his pot brownies, which turned a few grams into about 1.5 pounds. Insanity, am I right? Over 100 people recently rallied in support of Lavoro last week at his initial court hearing, where he turned down a plea deal and his lawyer moved to have the evidence dismissed on the grounds that it was illegally obtained. So, while you can't be put to death for marijuana in Texas, you surely can spend the rest of your life behind bars for it. You know, the last time a satire article swept across the web concerning marijuana in Texas was last year when an article put out by Tribune Herald told of a legislator dropping a joint in the middle of a legislative session as he argued against legalization. Now, the thing about that is that Tribune Herald put out this article whenever the legislature was not in session and no bills had been considered on the subject, but people just saw this article and took it as real and just ran with it. And now I would like to disclose that I am actually the author behind that article, as Tribune Herald is my satire website that I do as a side project for fun. So while we're not trying to spread any misconceptions out there, we were trying to poke fun at the absurdity of lawmakers and the hypocriticalness of what they do. So, yeah, it wasn't real, and please don't spread that as being real, but take it for what it is, satire. All right, we're about to wrap up the show now. I just wanted to close with some final thoughts. The other day, me and a friend of mine were at a convenience store, and they had a TV going on in there with CNN on, and it was featuring piece on what's going on in Colorado with marijuana legalization, and Mason Tivert was on, and he was being interviewed, and I just, took great interest in it. I was standing there watching it while he was off getting a soda or whatever, and as he walked up and asked me if he was ready to go, I said, yeah. So as we're walking out the door, he says, is it just the same old news stuff with CNN and just in general? And I said, actually, it was pretty good. 10 years ago, we couldn't buy a good piece of news about cannabis in this country. And now, right now, we get good news just about every day. So, just shows you that things are going in a much better direction. We've gained so much progress, and things are totally looking up. And we're on the tail end of 4th of July weekend today, and we celebrated Independence Day on Friday, and that's really what this movement is about. It's gaining freedom from oppression. You know, we're ingesting a plant that is, while it's non-toxic, it shouldn't matter whether it harms us or not. We own our bodies, therefore we shouldn't have it dictated to us what we put into them. Only our actions that we do to others should be considered here. And so this weekend, you know, we should, you know, really, really recognize the strides that we've made, everything we've gained, everything we've done, and everything we have to look forward to. It's very much an independence movement, and I want to thank each and every one of you for being out there and being a part of it. I'm Stephen Carter for the Texas Cannabis Report. Have a good one.
If I said I told you so, let it roll, let it roll, let it roll on down the road. If I said I told you so, let it roll, let it roll, let it roll on down the road. Yeah, I refuse to ever back down. I've been a part of the boss, I've been true to now. Can they cover up from under us? They fuck with us and beg for trust. This wonderlust was built for us, I mean all of us. Raise your head and raise your fist, put down your fucking Twitter pics. Use your mind, corrupt your tits and throw a brick in the establishment. Yeah, follow me, let's make a change. I ain't trying to box it out there, I'm trying to box with your brain.
If I said I told you so, let it roll, let it roll, let it roll on down the road. If I said sail the time I pen, my soul stash and notepads and cachet within. We the people are unequal, information makes us lethal. What's the death before dishonor when your honor is deceitful? When the music stops, all we've got is our voice at the top of your lungs. Maybe feel the noise, open your eyes to the lies brought to you by the government. Political puppets got a corporate hand in your ass and you're loving it.
If I said I told you so, let it roll, let it roll, let it roll on down.
If I see